Oh Lord, oh Lord, what have I done? I've fallen in love with a man on the run. Oh Lord, oh Lord, I'm begging you, please don't take that sinner from me. Oh, don't take that sinner from me. Oh Lord, oh Lord, what do I do? I've fallen for someone who's nothing like you. He's raised on the edge of the devil's backbone. Oh, I just wanna take him on. Oh, I just wanna take him on.
Chapter 28. Lines in the Sand.
Oh Lord, oh Lord, it's somewhere between a hangman's knife and 3 miles to feed. Was in a rock or a ride he could choose. He did what he had to do. Oh, he did what he had to do.
Naboo, 12 years ago. 6 months before the liberation of Naboo. Outside the abandoned villa, the damp, wet heat of a Naboo summer pressed in like a vice. But inside the manor's stone walls, it was cool and dry. The air conditioning system still working, despite the fact that no one had lived here for at least 6 months now. Padme and Obi-Wan would pull the power cells the aircon system was using when they left, but for now they left them where they were. It provided a welcome relief from the heat outside. They were in the Seven Hills region, about 100 kilometers from Theed, the furthest from the city that Padme had been since they had returned to Naboo 6 months ago. She had spent a lot of time here when she had been younger. Many Naboo aristocrats kept working estates in the Seven Hills, some of her handmaidens' families among them. The Naberis didn't. Most of their properties were in the Lake District and the Riverlands. But her friends did. It probably would have made more sense for Sashay Orabe to come instead of Padme herself, but she had been so sick of spending all her time cooped up in the city that she had insisted. This area wasn't supposed to be particularly dangerous, especially once they were past the siege lines around the city. But the only reason that Captain Panaka had allowed her to go at all was because Obi-Wan was accompanying her. This was the fifth and final villa they had passed through, searching for survivors, none, and scavenging power cells, food, and other supplies to take back to the city. They had only seen droids a few times, and twice those had been vulture droids doing routine flyovers, once a patrol of battle droids marching down the road towards the nearest large town, Evalora. Obi-Wan hadn't even had to ignite his lightsaber. Padme had been hoping that the remainder of the excursion would be equally uneventful, but then the battle droids had shown up. They were upstairs in the villa's master bedroom, looking through the possessions that had been left behind when the family who had lived here had either fled or been captured. Obi-Wan, kneeling to dig through a chest, suddenly jerked upright, his hand falling to his lightsaber hilt. "What?" Padme began, then heard the door downstairs hiss open, metallic footsteps clanking on the tiled floor of the atrium below them. Frantically, she looked around, but the only exit from the suite led straight onto a balcony overlooking the atrium. The other doors led to a refresher and a dressing room, and the windows looked out on the courtyard. She could hear the droids on the balcony outside. Any moment now, they would come in. Obi-Wan lunged across the room and caught her around the waist, his other hand slapping over her mouth as Padme let out an involuntary squeak of surprise and protest. He pulled her back into the wardrobe, the door sliding shut in front of them, just as the battle droids tromped into the bedroom. They crouched in the flat blackness of the wardrobe, Obi-Wan's breath harsh against Padme's ear, and the winter coats inside brushing against the side of her face. "Please, please, please don't look," she thought, listening to the battle droids pacing through the bedroom, into the refresher and the dressing room, on the balcony outside and through the other rooms in the villa. Occasionally they chattered to each other, inane comments or reports on the condition of the villa as they cleared various rooms. "Please leave. There's nothing here. There's nothing to find." She didn't dare move, not even to take Obi-Wan's hand off from over her mouth. The floor above them creaked as more droids searched upstairs. She stiffened as steps drew closer to their hiding space, feeling Obi-Wan do the same. He shifted his hand off her belly, making her shiver despite the fact that she knew he was reaching for his lightsaber. After a moment, the footsteps receded, and Padme squeezed her eyes shut, letting her breath hiss out in something like relief. She kept her hand on her blaster grip, though.
"There's no one up here,"
a battle droid announced eventually.
"Move out."
They didn't move until she heard the door shut and the sound of the droids retreating down the stairs. Obi-Wan took his hand off her mouth, breathing, "Sorry," against her ear as he twitched a finger at the door. It slid open a bare centimeter, just enough space for Padme to peer out and ascertain that all the droids had left. She folded a hand around the edge of the door and pushed it the rest of the way open to climb out, resisting the urge to collapse on the floor as her legs threatened to give out beneath her. She hadn't realized how tense she was. Obi-Wan followed her, returning his lightsaber to his belt. "That was close," he said, sounding a little breathless. "I wonder who they were looking for. There weren't supposed to be any patrols in this area for another 3 days. "They can't have been looking very hard," Padme said, wiping her sweating palms against her thighs. "We weren't hiding that well." Obi-Wan crossed to the nearest window and twitched back the curtain a little to peer out into the courtyard. "They're searching the rest of the estate," he reported. "I don't think they'll come back here. Battle droids don't tend to repeat tasks once they've been completed, but we might be stuck here a while." "That actually sounds like a good idea right now." Padme sank down onto the foot of the bed, trying to slow her pounding heart. Her hands were shaking a little from nerves. It wasn't the closest call she had ever had, but it was the closest in a few months. "It would have been nothing even if they'd found you," she reminded herself. "Obi-Wan would have protected you." That was no small thing. Obi-Wan was easily the deadliest weapon in Naboo's small arsenal. Warrior, not weapon. The way that some of the other Naboo treated him, it was an important distinction to make. He came over to sit down beside her.
"I think so, too."
Even a few months ago, he would have said that there had never been any real danger, but now he just looked as tired as Padme felt. Without really thinking about it, she leaned her head against his shoulder, feeling him hesitate for a moment before he put his arm around her. He was warm and familiar, a comforting bulwark against the rest of the galaxy. Padme shut her eyes, listening to the sound of his breathing, letting her own slow to match his. After a few minutes, she looked up. Obi-Wan had his eyes closed, exhaustion settled into every line of his body. Padme had seen him every day for the past 6 months. She hadn't realized by now how much he had changed since he had arrived on Naboo. He had lost his Jedi robes months ago. Except for the braid and the lightsaber, there was nothing left for the Padawan he had been then. "Oh, Padme, you shouldn't do this," she thought, and kissed him. It was off-center and messy, nothing like the kisses she had seen in Holovids. Obi-Wan froze. Jedi precognition or not, he apparently hadn't seen that coming. And Padme was already preparing an apology when he tipped two fingers beneath her chin, tilted her head up, and kissed her back. It was a real kiss this time, not like her aborted attempt, and she must have made some kind of sound of surprise because Obi-Wan started to pull back. Padme reached up to stop him, folding her hands around his upper arms, and kissed him again. It felt good. It felt really good, and it felt even better when she decided to adjust the awkward angle by dint of climbing into Obi-Wan's lap. He put his arms around her, his hands broad against the width of her back as he braced her. His lightsaber was digging painfully into her thigh, so she pulled it loose of his belt and dropped it onto the bed beside them. Obi-Wan startled a little at that, then smiled and kissed her neck. His lips a little chapped against her skin, but, oh, she liked that. She tilted her head back as he kissed his way down her neck, pausing to nip her collarbone lightly, which made her giggle. He glanced up and smiled again, almost shyly, and Padme cupped his face between her hands and kissed him. She hadn't realized how much she had wanted this until now. She didn't know how long they were there, just that it was long enough that she was squirming impatiently in Obi-Wan's lap, wanting... She didn't know what she wanted, but she was certain it would be good when she got it. His hands hadn't strayed from her waist, which Padme wasn't sure whether she was relieved or disappointed by. She liked all the kissing. Obi-Wan was good at it. He made a soft, amused sound in the back of his throat, apparently catching the thought. "Have you ever done this before?" he asked her. Padme felt heat flood her cheeks, but had to admit. "No. Have you?" Obi-Wan hesitated for a moment, then said, "Yes, there were others, other Jedi mostly, and we were friends. Is that a problem?" "No. One of us should know what they're doing." She kissed him quickly, feeling a smile curve against her lips, then had to ask, "Are Jedi allowed?" Obi-Wan blinked once. "Yes and no," he said finally, then tightened his grip on her waist and lifted her off his lap. Padme pulled her legs up onto the bed and turned towards him, waiting for him to go on. Obi-Wan's face did something complicated as he thought. Then he said finally, "It's complicated. A lot of Jedi are celibate, but it's not required. And most of us aren't. We're not really encouraged. If you have affairs within the Order, it's usually all right, because we all know how it's supposed to be. We're warned against attachment, because it can cloud our judgment. Our only loyalty is supposed to be to the Order and the Republic, and attachments to other people complicate that." Padme swallowed. It seemed like an impossible way to live, but she supposed that the Jedi had done so for generations now. "Is that how you feel?" "I have no idea," Obi-Wan told her. He looked down at his hands, flexing his fingers. "I always thought so, but now, with you, and after what happened to Qui-Gon, I don't know anymore." He swallowed, then added in what was obviously painful confession, "I do want you, Padme, and it scares me a little. I'm a Jedi. We're not supposed to want anything." "But..." He swept a hand through his overlong hair, running his Padawan braid through his fingers. He glanced down at it, then flicked it aside. "I'm not sure," he said slowly, "that it's going to matter much longer." Padme stilled. She had seen him use his precognition before, remembered Qui-Gon mentioning it once on the journey back from Coruscant. Jedi could, and did, see the future, but the further in advance it was, the less clear, or so Obi-Wan had explained to her. "Because we're all going to die?" "Everyone dies," Obi-Wan said automatically, then shook his head. "I don't know. That would be too easy. The Force is seldom that clear." He reached out with one hand, almost shy, and tucked a curl behind her ear. Padme tipped her face up to him, feeling his fingers linger against her cheek. She was aware of the wind outside, but couldn't hear any more battle droids. "What are you going to do?" Obi-Wan shut his eyes for a moment. "What I want," he said at last, opening them, and kissed her again. Alderaan. Present day. Ahsoka had crept into Luminara's bedroom during the night and was still there in the morning, asleep on the divan at the foot of the bed with her cloak pulled over her. Barris was sleeping too, cocooned so tightly in her blankets that Luminara knew from experience it would take her at least 5 minutes to struggle out, which was bad field discipline, but still a little charming. Luminara watched them both for a few minutes while she fixed her headdress in place, letting the folds settle against the back of her neck as she got the mass of fabric settled, then stepped out of the room and let the door slide silently closed behind her. She could sense Kit and Eith sleeping in the bedroom they were sharing. Quinlan was asleep on the couch in the sitting room, one arm thrown over his eyes. Luminara shifted a thread of the force in his direction to keep him from waking as he started to stir. He grumbled in his sleep and rolled over. Luminara went to the outer door, sensing the positions of the guards in the corridor beyond it. She lifted a hand over the control panel, locked from the outside, and pushed gently with the force. The door slid open, Naboo Marines jumping in surprise and scrambling to level the blasters at her. Luminara let herself smile, sharp, and said,
"I want to speak with Obi-Wan Kenobi and Queen Amidala."
She kept her hands where the guards could see them, for their sakes, and leaned against the doorframe, deliberately casual in a way that she usually avoided. This time, though, she wanted the reaction that it would get. "How did you—" one of the Marines began, staring, before a companion elbowed him in the ribs, and he spluttered to a stop on the words.
"I want to speak with Obi-Wan Kenobi and Queen Amidala," Luminara repeated. "They'll see me."
Obi-Wan would, she was certain of that, and she was almost positive that it was him that she needed to convince, not the Queen. In this case, at least, the Queen would take her husband's lead. The Marine Sergeant, Cobber, jerked her chin at the other Marines and stepped slightly aside to tap her comlink. The others kept their blasters fixed on Luminara as she let the door slide shut behind her. "Milady, I'm sorry to disturb you," Master Sergeant Cobber said after a moment. "One of the Jedi wants to speak to Her Royal Highness and Captain Kenobi."
"Which one?"
The woman's voice was rough with sleep. The call must have woken her up. Cobber's glance slid towards Luminara. "The Mary Ellen? Luminara Unduli?"
"Just a moment."
Luminara waited patiently, folding her hands over her belt buckles. Her bad knee ached a little. She thought it had more to do with the weather than anything else.
"They'll see her,"
said the woman. One of the handmaidens, presumably, but Luminara couldn't tell whether it was Rabe Amidori or Lydia Sagahan. It wouldn't be Senator Padme Amidala.
"Captain Kenobi says to bring her up personally."
Cobber's brow furrowed.
"My lady..."
Obi-Wan's voice came over the comlink.
"Luminara's not a security threat, and if she was, one Marine more or less wouldn't make a difference. Would they, Luminara?"
Luminara raised an eyebrow as Cobber grimaced and stepped over so that she was in the comlink's pickup range. "No."
"Good. I'll see you in a few minutes."
The connection cut out.
Cobber lowered the comlink. Her expression was unhappy. Given that she had been one of the Marines on guard outside the makeshift brig on the light freighter, Luminara didn't blame her for not wanting to be alone with the Jedi Knight who had tried to kidnap the Queen of Naboo.
"Stay here," she told the other Marines, who didn't look much happier about the situation. "Don't let any of the others out." "Some of them have their lightsabers, Top." "I am aware, Coyle. If they were going to use them, they would have done so already." Cobber turned toward Luminara, her grip tightening for a moment on her blaster rifle, before she said, "Come on, Master Jedi." Luminara followed her, her long split overskirt swishing against her leggings with a whisper of rough silk. It was early in the morning. There were a few servants in the corridors, along with Alderaanian guards stationed at regular intervals, but otherwise it was still quiet.
She could feel Master Sergeant Copper's unease, the way the other woman's finger pressed hard against the trigger guard of her blaster rifle, like she was just waiting for an excuse to use it. The Naboo were, in general, extremely wary of Jedi. After some of what Obi-Wan had told her after the failed retrieval attempt, Luminara wasn't surprised. If he and the Queen had been willing to talk to us, we could have avoided all this. Of course, that had been out of the question before, and now there was no way that Obi-Wan Kenobi would share information with the Order. Not after what they had tried to do to him. The doors that they stopped outside were flanked by a pair of Naboo royal guards, who eyed their approach warily. One of them said, "Captain Kenobi says to go in, Master Jedi." "Thank you." Luminara stepped forward as the doors slid open. Master Sergeant Kaber remained where she was, exchanging an unreadable look with the guards. The suite was much larger than the one the Jedi had been given. Inside, Luminara could hear the soft murmur of voices. Obi-Wan's half-familiar tenor, and the Queen's much lighter tones. She walked in the direction they were coming from, passing through the otherwise empty sitting room, and down a short hallway before she finally reached a bedroom. She hesitated in the doorway, leaning back on one foot as she surveyed the scene inside. Obi-Wan, dressed in a light-colored shirt and dark pants, was sitting at a round table by the window, looking at an open case whose contents Luminara couldn't see from here. Queen Amidala, wrapped in a blue dressing gown with bands of gold embroidery down the sleeves, was perched on the table with one knee over the other, leaning down to say something to him. After a moment, she looked up, tensing for a moment when she saw Luminara, then said, "Obi-Wan?" Obi-Wan turned unhurriedly, then reached out with one hand and hooked another chair. "Come and sit down," he said. "Do you want me to go?" the Queen asked Obi-Wan, her gaze flicking nervously to Luminara. "I think this isn't just about the Jedi," Obi-Wan said. He pushed the case on the table to one side as Luminara came over, and she finally saw what was inside. Lightsabers. Hers, Kit's, and Eeth's, and another one that she didn't recognize immediately. Obi-Wan's own lightsaber was lying on the table beside it. "Is it, Luminara?" "Not entirely." She bowed slightly to the Queen before she took the proffered seat. "Your Majesty." "Master Unduli." The Queen gave her a wary look, but didn't move. "Do you know why I'm here?" Luminara asked Obi-Wan. He considered her for a moment, his blue eyes unreadable, and then said, "I can guess. I can do more than guess. I am a seer, after all." "You always said that you weren't a very good one," Luminara felt compelled to point out. The corner of his mouth quirked up slightly in something that wasn't quite a smile. "I'm not. It does actually work on occasion, though. Rare occasion." Luminara clasped her hands on top of the table, trying not to look at the lightsabers, because she was smart enough to recognize a test when she saw one. "Is it true?" Obi-Wan didn't ask her what she meant, though he hesitated for a moment before answering. "Plo and Thulm thought it was. Shakti and Syndralic, too. But no one from the Council came to tell me about it. At least, not officially, if that's what you're asking. They wouldn't have, though. They wanted to keep me compliant as long as they could." "Do you believe them?" Luminara asked. "Now, I mean, at the time..." "I wish I didn't," Obi-Wan said. He sighed and sat back in his chair, rubbing a hand over his eyes. "Quinn and the kids told you all of it?" "Yes, but it's always hard to tell when Quinlan is telling the truth. He's a shadow for a reason." "I'm at least as good a liar as Quinlan Voss, you know," Obi-Wan said, but the words were without heat. I don't believe that anyone in the Order would ever speak lightly of Revan's cure, and no one, let alone a counselor, would throw it around as an idle threat. He flicked his gaze at her.
Do you?
Luminara shut her eyes, thinking the question over for a long time before answering. She had been thinking about it all night, all morning, had been turning it over and over in her mind since Quinlan had said the words. No, she said at last. No, I don't. I wish I did.
So do I.
What's Revan's cure? Queen Amidala asked, glancing between Luminara and her husband. She looked young and tired without her face paint, her long hair spilling over her shoulder in a tumble of loose curls. Seeing her like this made it hard to remember that she was one of the most powerful beings in the galaxy, one of the most dangerous women alive today or at any time in the history of the Republic. Obi-Wan's unease spiked at the question, the Force jumping.
It's something one Jedi can do to another, he said elliptically. It's a punishment that hasn't been used since the days of the Old Republic, on knights or padawans that had turned to the dark side, or had done other things that were incompatible with the code.
It's the worst thing one Jedi can do to another, Luminara clarified. From the set of the Queen's jaw, she had to be able to tell that Obi-Wan was leaving out the most important part of the punishment.
The Jedi Council wanted to do it to you?
According to Plo Koon. Obi-Wan ran a hand over his chin, which was freshly shaven and a little pinkish. Luminara was glad that he had gotten rid of the beard. She didn't think that she would have any trouble telling him and his counterpart apart, but it was nice to have that quick visual distinction.
Obi-Wan turned to smile at his wife, though there was an edge to it.
Do you remember Master Plo? I'm not sure you ever met. The Kaldor.
I remember him, she said. He was always very kind.
She reached for Obi-Wan's hand, lacing their fingers together, and the unevenness melted away from his smile as his affection warmed the Force. Luminara felt a beat of hot, inchoate jealousy, then shoved it aside and said,
Obi-Wan, why is Ahsoka here? Why isn't Plo? If what the Council decided was so terrible...
Plo decided to stay with the Order, but Ahsoka wouldn't, Obi-Wan said, turning his attention back to her. You'd do better to ask her that, not me, but Plo entrusted her to me. He looked uncomfortable again. Her safety and her training.
Luminara stared at him.
You're joking. I don't know why everyone seems to find it so unbelievable, Obi-Wan said, with a hint of wry humor.
Master Kenobi trained a Padawan when he was considerably younger than I am now.
Having actually spoken to both Kenobi and Skywalker, I wouldn't actually call that much of an endorsement, Luminara pointed out. And he's a Jedi Knight.
So am I.
The Queen drew in her breath, sharp, and her grip tightened on her husband's hand.
Obi-Wan. I'm not like that, Obi-Wan said quickly.
He raised her hand and brushed a kiss across her knuckles, meeting her eyes.
I'm not sure what kind of Jedi I am, but I'm not like that. I am a Jedi, though.
You passed the trials?
Luminara had to ask, even though he had said as much already.
The full trials, all of it. The Room of Little Ease, the Chamber of the Ordeal, everything.
Full rites, Obi-Wan said. Nobody could find the procedure for putting an accused darksider through the trials, even though there's precedent from the Old Republic. So they used the procedure for knighthood instead, since I was still a Padawan when I resigned.
He hesitated for a moment, glancing at the Queen, and added,
No one expected me to survive the trials.
So I suppose they decided that it didn't really matter. Let me see your lightsaber.
Obi-Wan, the Queen began.
It's all right.
He slid his hand free of hers and picked up his lightsaber, handing it to Luminara.
She took it, feeling her hand dip slightly under the weight, and turned her chair to one side so that she had space to ignite it. The blade sprang up in front of her, blazing and perfect and blue.
Not white.
Luminara stared at it for a long moment, then deactivated the blade and handed the hilt back to Obi-Wan.
How?
He shrugged.
The Force. Lightsaber blades changing colors, inside or outside of the Chamber of the Ordeal, was one of those things that had always been rumored, but only ever came up in Jedi fairy tales, and histories so old they were more legend than truth.
Luminara wasn't sure how she felt about seeing it now, right in front of her eyes.
The Force did this, she thought.
Not the Council, not the Order.
The Force.
The Force didn't serve the Jedi. They forgot that sometimes.
Luminara rested her elbows on the tabletop, clasping her hands together and tilting her forehead down against them.
Why did you break your vows, Obi-Wan? All those years ago on Naboo, why did you break your vows?
She felt Obi-Wan's start of surprise in the Force, Amidala's sudden tension. After a moment, Obi-Wan said,
Because I thought I was going to die. Because I thought the Order had abandoned me. Because I couldn't keep my vows and do the things I had to do to keep my friends safe. To keep the woman I love safe.
Amidala caught Obi-Wan's hand again.
That's a lot of vows to break, Luminara said.
Obi-Wan met her eyes.
I know. I knew it then, and I know it now.
He was quiet for a moment, looking down at his lightsaber and the Queen's hand in his, then said,
Why are you asking me this?
Barriss, Luminara hesitated. You saw the Council, Obi-Wan. Will they do what they wanted to do to you, to her, if she goes back?
Obi-Wan's eyes went wide.
I don't know, he said. Luminara, I have no idea. They thought I was a Darksider, but I have no idea how they treat one of their own. No one's thought of me as a Jedi for years.
His focus sharpened in the Force.
You think that they'd use Revan's cure on her?
I don't know, Luminara confessed.
She thinks so.
She ran her hands over her face.
Obi-Wan, I don't know. If the Council, if Yoda, would vote to use Revan's cure on a knight fresh from the trials, then I don't know what they'd do. And Barriss is a Padawan.
She flattened her hands on the table and forced her voice to calm, even though she knew that Obi-Wan would be able to sense her agitation.
Obi-Wan, I'm a knight. I took vows, and I meant them. But I have a responsibility to my Padawan, to the Force, and...
She had to stop to take a breath, trying to contemplate the enormity of what she was doing.
If I have to choose between the Order and my apprentice's soul, then it's not even a question.
You know it may not come to that, Obi-Wan said, his expression unreadable.
I know, Luminara said.
She stared at the case of lightsabers, finally recognizing the half-familiar one as Qui-Gon Jinn's old saber. Amidala must have brought it for Obi-Wan, in hopes of rescuing him or trading prisoners for him.
She lifted her gaze and said, I remember the occupation, you know. The queen stilled, but Obi-Wan just said calmly, What do you mean? It used to be all we talked about. Our generation, Quinlan and Stas and the others, and me. We sacrificed a lot of things for the Order, but half of that is because we don't know any different, and half of it is because it's worth it. Because it's supposed to be worth it.
The Order is all we know and all we have, Obi-Wan said. His voice was soft and a little sad. Numenara saw the Queen's grip tighten on his hand.
When you were missing, Numenara said slowly, it was... There are exchanges that we make with the Order. The kind of exchanges that we don't talk about. We don't leave anyone behind, not if there's still a chance. We don't leave any Jedi behind. Not if there's a chance to get them out.
Obi-Wan glanced aside.
We're not supposed to compromise what we are, our vows to each other, for simple expediency, Luminara went on, trying to articulate what she had been dwelling on for the past month. Some things you aren't supposed to sacrifice. I took my trials while you were on Naboo. What I saw...
She shook her head.
You don't know what it's like to come to knighthood knowing that the Order will sacrifice you. Not because it's the right thing to do, not because it's the will of the Force, but because it's more convenient than the alternative.
Don't I? Obi-Wan said softly.
You weren't there, Luminara had to say, because he hadn't been, and that was the whole problem. That once the precedent had been set, it could never be undone. Either precedent.
She looked down at her black fingernails and flattened her hands against the table.
Eve and Kit might be able to live with the fact that the Council has done that twice now, but I don't think I can.
Luminara, Obi-Wan began, then stopped as Queen Amidala's grip tightened on his hand. He looked at her, then back at Luminara. He took a deep breath and said, Say the words, Luminara. She squeezed her eyes shut, counting off breaths, then opened her eyes again.
I want to leave the Order and come over to Naboo.
The Queen met her gaze for a moment, a mixture of triumph and surprise wavering in the Force. Obi-Wan said, What makes you think we'll have you?
Because Quinlan's here, and because Plo trusted you with Ahsoka.
She could feel Obi-Wan prodding gently with the Force, and dropped her shields, watching him raise his eyebrows until she nodded. His mental sweep was brief but not intrusive, a quick, cool whisper through her mind, like wind moving sand over the shore. It was over almost as soon as it had begun. Obi-Wan sat back in his chair and looked up at the Queen. Something unspoken passed between them. The Queen nodded slightly, and Obi-Wan reached over to take Luminara's lightsaber out of the case. Betray her, he said as she reached for it, the lightsaber held between the two of them. And I'll kill you. Turn to the dark side, Luminara said, and I'll return the favor. The corner of his mouth lifted a little in a smile as he released his grip on her lightsaber.
Fair enough.
Master Quinlan. The voice was young, female. Quinlan cracked an eye open, shaking off the last clinging strands of sleep as he pushed himself upright. His back popped and he grimaced. He had slept in worse places than on a reasonably comfortable couch in a palace, but it had been a rough couple of days, and he could feel it in every two-tenths muscle. Ahsoka and Barriss were leaning over him. Barriss, with her arms wrapped around herself and her shoulders drawn in. Ahsoka just looking worried. She had been the one to speak. Quinlan rubbed a hand over his face, pushing his dreads back from his eyes. For a moment, his sleep-fogged mind couldn't put together their presence with his location, Then it snapped together, and he remembered where he was. "What is it?" Barris chewed on her lip, then said, "My master's gone." "What? Luminara?" Quinlan couldn't help looking around, like Barris and Ahsoka had just overlooked her, and Luminara would just pop out from behind a couch. But of course, she wasn't there. "What do you mean she's gone?" "She isn't here," Barris said miserably. "I woke up and she was gone. What if she..." She bit her lip, hesitating, then burst out. "What if she did something?"
"Like what?"
Quinlan dropped a hand to his lightsaber to check that it was still there. He could see that Barris and Ahsoka were both wearing theirs. Wherever Luminara had gone, she hadn't taken a weapon. "I don't know," Barris admitted. She glanced around, her expression helpless, then sank down onto the edge of the calf table between the sitting room's two crescent-shaped couches. Ahsoka sat down beside her, putting a hand on her shoulder. "What if Queen Amidala did something to her?"
"Are Kit and Eeth still here?"
Since Quinlan could sense them in the other room, he already knew the answer to that, but saying it out loud would be better for the Padawans.
"Yes," Barris said, drawing out the single syllable into two.
"Then Amidala didn't do anything to her." Quinlan glanced around the room again.
"She's just not here."
He was pretty sure that he would have woken up if Luminara had come through the sitting room, but that was assuming she hadn't used the Force to keep him asleep. That was a pretty easy Force trick, well within a fully trained knight's capabilities. He leaned down to pull his boots on, yawning into his hand as he did so.
"I'm sure she'll come back."
Barris nodded a little, her expression still worried. "I just got her back," she said in a small voice, then looked embarrassed by the confession. "I don't mean... I just..."
"I know what you meant," Quinlan said. "I used to be a Padawan too, remember?"
And there had been a bad moment or 10 when he had thought that he'd been an orphaned Padawan. Thulm hadn't taken him on as many assignments as most masters would have, since not every mission he ran was appropriate to have a child, or later a teenager, tagging along on. Quinlan knew that he had tried to select his own missions for situations where a teenage Kefar's presence would have been unremarkable, but that wasn't always a possibility, as Quinlan had found once he had been knighted and had had to integrate Ayla into his own missions. He had vivid memories of being 9 and 12 and 15 and 17, left with Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan, while Thulm went off to save the Republic, and walking in on Qui-Gon and Adi Gallia and Plo Koon, trying to decide whether they ought to tell him that they had lost contact with Thulm. He'd been lucky. They'd all been false alarms. Granted, at least one of those occasions had gone on for almost 6 months. Quinlan had spent it with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, but he knew that the Council had been discussing which knight to reassign him to when Thulm had turned up again. "What happens now?" Ahsoka asked, clasping her hands between her knees. She looked in the direction of the door that led to the outside corridor, as if hoping that Luminara or Obi-Wan would come through.
"Now we wait," Quinlan told her. "Or you wait, and I use the fresher."
Her mouth quirked a little in amusement. Quinlan stood up, clasped Barris's shoulder briefly, and ducked into Luminara's room to use the ensuite refresher. After he had used the toilet, he switched the shower on to full blast and checked the small room quickly for bugs, then pulled a nondescript, unmarked comlink out of one of his belt pouches and flicked it on.
"Spectre to Ghost, come in," he said softly. "Ghost, this is Spectre, come in."
There was a moment of static that made Quinlan's heart stop. Then Ayla's voice came sleepily over the connection.
"This is Ghost."
Quinlan let out a breath of sheer relief.
"It's me," he said. "I'm on world. We need to talk as soon as possible."
He sensed his former apprentice's sudden alertness.
"Should I come to you?"
"That would be unwise,"
Quinlan said. I'll meet you. Stand by and I'll let you know when and where.
Understood,
Ayla said quickly. Good. Don't do anything until I talk to you again, no matter what you hear. Spectre out. He got the connection and turned the comlink off, hesitating for a moment over whether or not to pull the power cell, before finally deciding against it. Ayla might need to contact him in a hurry. He wasn't going to cut off that line of communication, even considering the risk it posed. Quinlan showered quickly, glad of the hot water, then toweled off and got dressed again. He emerged to find Kit and Eeth up, but Luminara still nowhere in sight. The two Jedi Masters were regarding Ahsoka and Barriss with near-identical expressions that Quinlan didn't need the Force to read. As he came in, Eeth transferred his disappointed, sorrowful look to him. Quinlan resisted the urge to remind him that someone on the Jedi High Council didn't have any room to be throwing stones, never mind that Eeth hadn't been around during Obi-Wan's trial. He had barely sat down again when the door slid open and Obi-Wan came in. He had dressed and shaved, looking distinctly more comfortable in Naboo moonwear than he had in his Jedi robes. The Queen must have packed his own clothes in the hopes of negotiating for his release, because they were perfectly tailored to him, or would have been if Obi-Wan hadn't lost weight during his captivity. He wore a high-collared black velvet vest over a dove-gray shirt. The full sleeves of his shirt were split and fastened up over the elbow with silver and pearl clips to reveal a lavender-colored undershirt beneath. His black leather vambraces were embossed with the royal emblem of Naboo, repeated over and over again. The left had an inset comlink. Quinlan squinted at them and decided that if they were the same as his usual vambraces, then they probably had a few other nasty surprises packed away. A pair of low-slung belts, joined by a rectangular belt buckle, held his lightsabers. His own, and what Quinlan recognized after a moment as Qui-Gon Jinn's old lightsaber, which Obi-Wan had carried through the occupation and for a few years afterwards. Quinlan knew that he normally carried a blaster as well, but he wasn't doing so now. Or at least, not openly. He was pretty sure Obi-Wan had a holdout pistol tucked away at the small of his back, as well as knives in his knee-high black boots. Luminara followed Obi-Wan into the room, with a beat of hesitation when she saw everyone watching her. Her lightsaber was back on her belt, and Quinlan saw the realization dawning on Eeth's face as the Zabrak Master pushed to his feet. "Master Unduli, sit down, Master Koth," Obi-Wan said, his voice friendly, but the words pointed. He met Eeth's gaze and held it, calm and confident now that he was back on his own ground and not in a Jedi cell. Eeth stared at him for a long moment, then sat. Luminara put an arm out for Barriss as her apprentice went quickly to her side, her gaze flickering to the lightsaber on her belt, then away again. As I sat down on the couch next to Quinlan and Ahsoka, he had the distinct impression that a line was being drawn, with them on one side and Eeth and Kit on the other. It wasn't a good feeling. Obi-Wan crossed his arms over his chest. He eyed them all for a moment, his expression calculating, and then said, "Master Koth, Master Fisto, Her Royal Highness has agreed to release you. You'll be transported to a neutral planet, where you'll be able to make your own way back to Coruscant." "And Master Unduli?" Kit asked. Obi-Wan glanced at her, raising an eyebrow. Luminara took a deep breath, then folded her hands over each other and said calmly, "I've decided to stay with the Naboo." Barriss let out a gasp of surprise, her eyes going wide as she turned to stare at her. "Master?"
"Luminara, this is treason," Eeth began.
"I don't have to explain myself to you, Master Koth," Luminara said, her expression set. "Whether Barriss wants to remain, or if she will return to Coruscant with you and Kit, is her decision." "I'll stay," Barriss said immediately. She tipped her chin up, swallowing once before she continued. "I'll stay," she repeated. "Like Master Luminara, and Master Voss, and Ahsoka."
"Luminara, Quinlan,"
Kit said. You know what this will do to the Order. One night, even two choosing to resign is one thing. But this... Luminara glanced aside. The Order can stand this, she said. And it seems to me that the Order has other things to concern itself with at the moment. Luminara, I've made my decision. Eeth stood. He was taller than Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan had to tilt his head back slightly to meet his gaze. Is this what you want, Captain Kenobi? To divide the Order? I don't give a damn about the Jedi Order, Obi-Wan said flatly, which was a blatant lie since he and Quinlan had already had this discussion, but Quinlan wasn't about to admit that to Eeth and Kit. The Jedi Order would have been happy to rip my mind from my skull and remake it to their pleasure. You're lucky I didn't set the temple on fire on my way out. Quinlan winced. Eeth took a step toward him, and Obi-Wan held his ground, the force flexing around them both, caught between one Jedi and another. Quinlan wasn't aware of getting to his feet, didn't see Luminara and Kit do so either, the Padawans frozen where they sat. Master Eeth, Kit said urgently, now is not the time. There was a moment where Quinlan thought that Eeth wouldn't back down, because the Force knew that Obi-Wan certainly wasn't going to, not on his own ground. Then Eeth let his gaze flick sideways as he broke the staring match. I hope the Order lives to regret this, he said. Trust me, Master Koth, Obi-Wan said. If it doesn't, that's the least of my worries at the moment. Padme hadn't realized how tense Queen Amidala had been over the course of the past month, as long as she had known the other woman, until Captain Kenobi was back at her side. Everything about the Queen seemed to have relaxed. Padme was also starting to get the idea of what she probably looked like after a night of very good sex, if the pleased expression on the Queen's face was anything to go by. It was a little disconcerting, to say the least. They weren't in the Aldera Royal Palace's throne room, but instead in a smaller, less grand room that was used for private conferences with the monarch and their advisors. Queen Brea was sitting in the toned-down throne, Bail at her right hand, and Mon Mothma on her left. Amidala and Captain Kenobi were in a pair of chairs next to Mon Mothma, with Padme and Lydia standing discreetly back out of the way. Padme had no idea where Rabe was, since when she had asked, Lydia had just said that the Queen had dispatched her on an errand. Opposite the Queen was the Duchess Satine Cries of Mandalore, her hands folded in her lap and her expression unreadable. She was alone. Mandalore didn't have the tradition of royal attendance that Naboo or Alderaan did, and Padme knew that Satine actually trusted very few other people when it came to the welfare of Mandalore. She wouldn't have brought anyone else into this meeting, not when the subject at hand was treason against the Republic. It hurt, just a little, to see Satine here. Padme and Satine Cries hadn't been friends, not quite, but they had been friendly on the rare occasions that they were both in the same place at the same time. The news of her murder had come as a huge shock. Padme hadn't expected her own reaction at seeing Satine here, alive and well. "I must admit, I'm surprised to see you here, Duchess," Amidala said at last, after the long, uncomfortable silence that had followed Queen Brea's introductory greeting. "I was under the impression that you didn't want anything to do with the Confederacy. You've been fairly outspoken about the subject in the past." Satine didn't react to the jab. She regarded Amidala coolly for a moment, then said, "Before anything else, Your Highness, I want to remind you that I don't approve of many of your actions in this regard." "And I remind you, Duchess, that my actions are not and have never been Mandalore's concern," Amidala said. "Naboo was threatened. We chose to defend ourselves. I thought that you, of all people, would understand that." "There is a difference between defense and warmongering." "Yes," said the Queen, "a debate I believe that we have had at some length numerous times before. Did you come here merely to continue it in front of witnesses, or do you have something new to contribute?"
Satine's mouth tightened.
Amidala leaned an elbow on the arm of her chair, toying with one of the braids framing her face. They were stranded with pearls, with more strung across the back of the heavy weight of the rest of her hair, which fell in loose curls past her waist. Seed pearls were embroidered on the jeweled panel of her dark gray bodice and on the triple bands gathering the bells of her long lavender sleeves around her biceps, more forming the buttons of her tight cuffs. Hundreds of tiny pearls formed wave patterns on the long, full overskirts of her gown. It was moonwear, rather than sunwear or pearlwear, as close to casual as a woman of Amidala's rank could get for a private meeting like this. The fact that Amidala wasn't in the royal face paint bore that out. She looked prepared to wait as long as it took to get a response from Satine. Captain Kenobi, sitting beside her, seemed equally patient, considering Satine with cool blue eyes. At last, Satine said, "You and I have disagreed on many things that the Republic has done over the past 10 years, Your Highness." Amidala tipped her head slightly in acknowledgement. "I have always had reason to believe that the Supreme Chancellor and the Galactic Senate had the Republic's best interests in mind." From the set of Satine's jaw, it hurt her to say the words. "Lately, I have come to doubt this." She raised a hand to forestall any comment, even though no one else had made any move to speak. "I do not refer to the Senate's decision to purchase a clone army from Kamino. My feelings on that subject are no secret."
"I'm listening," Amidala said softly.
"You know that I believe that violence breeds violence. This war proves that more clearly than 1,000 speeches ever could. I will never be a part of this war. Mandalore has no interest in joining this conflict. We never will."
"Are you here on behalf of Mandalore or on behalf of the Council of Neutral Systems?"
Bail asked, making Amidala flick a glance in his direction. Satine hesitated for an instant, barely long enough for Padme to register the pause.
"On this occasion, I speak only for Mandalore," she said at last. "I will take the results of this discussion to other neutral systems, however."
"I thought that you believed that a multitude makes discord, Duchess," Captain Kenobi said.
"In some cases, a multitude is unavoidable, Captain Kenobi, and this is one of those occasions. I found that discord is inevitable in politics."
"A fact of which I am well aware," Queen Amidala remarked. She tipped her head to one side, making the pearls in her hair shimmer in the room's soft lighting.
"Why are you here, Satine? Before the Federation attack on Naboo, the last time we spoke, you called me a warmonger who wanted nothing more than to make herself empress over a galaxy of corpses. Have you changed your mind on that count?"
Padme started in surprise, glad that her concealing handmaiden's robes covered up the motion. She had assumed that Amidala and Satine were on better terms than that. At least, she thought, that explained why the mood in the room had been so tense during Satine's call after the attack.
"That may have been poorly phrased," Satine admitted after a moment.
"That's certainly one way to describe it."
"Padme," Captain Kenobi said softly, glancing at her. She tilted her head slightly in acknowledgement.
"Go on, Duchess."
Satine considered her, one eyebrow arched, then continued. "As I was saying, Mandalore has no interest in joining this conflict. However, the Republic's recent actions have proven fraught on many accounts. Putting aside the formation of their new army, which I of course oppose..."
Amidala rolled her eyes.
"Of course." Satine ignored the interruption. "I find that the Senate's decision to take down the Holonet relays is an unforgivable breach of faith. Billions of beings depend on the Holonet for both their lives and their livelihoods. I won't even go into the harm it's done to the banking clan.
I know that you could care less about the Commerce Guilds, Your Highness, but not all of our systems have the economic luxury to untether ourselves even from such despicable entities as the Banking Clan and the Trade Federation.
Nearly all of the systems in the Confederacy continue to do business with the Commerce Guilds," Captain Kenobi said. Naboo is one of only a dozen or so that doesn't. It's regrettable, but sadly unavoidable.
Indeed. Satine flicked an imaginary speck of dust off the arm of her chair. I'm not sure if you're aware that Mandalore is dependent on imported food, drinks, and other supplies. Unfortunately, at this point, the damage to the planet's surface is too great for us to be fully self-sufficient. The agricultural colonies on our moons and on the other planets in the system aren't capable of providing the necessary resources. In a decade or two, perhaps, but not now. We depend on the holonet relays to purchase and import those resources. Amidala leaned forward, real concern in her eyes.
Your people are starving. Satine's words were flat.
I asked the Galactic Senate for aid the second time that our trade frigates failed to arrive. They responded that offering that kind of aid to a neutral system was out of the question, despite the fact that Mandalore has been a voting member of the Republic for millennia now. It seems that because Mandalore opposes the war with the Confederacy, we are now considered second-class citizens of the Republic. Her mouth, already set in a thin line, tightened even further.
"Are you asking the Confederacy for aid?" Amidala asked, her gaze intent.
Satine took a deep breath. Her nostrils flared slightly. She settled her shoulders against the back of her chair and tightened her grip on the arms.
"I'm asking if it's possible to join the Confederacy without taking part in your war."
Padme saw Captain Kenobi blink once in surprise.
Amidala studied her in silence for a few moments, then said, "It's hardly my war, Duchess."
Satine looked at Bail Organa.
"I know who presented that motion to the Galactic Senate."
Bail raised his hand slightly.
"A mistake in retrospect, I admit. I never thought the Senate would take it quite this far."
"You've no idea, Bail," Captain Kenobi said. Off the sudden intent looks that everyone in the room gave him, he said,
"Some 300 Jedi left Coruscant a week ago with the Republic Assault Force. I don't know where they were headed, but I doubt it's anywhere we'd be happy to see wiped off the map."
"The Jedi?" Satine said, shocked. "I thought that the Jedi traditionally stayed out of Republic military conflicts."
"Traditionally, we try and stay out, but always get dragged in eventually," Captain Kenobi said.
Padme gave him a sharp look, wondering if she had misheard the pronoun.
"If you don't believe me, Duchess, you're welcome to ask Master Quinlan Vos."
Satine looked honestly baffled.
"Who?"
Captain Kenobi's smile was almost a smirk. "One of the Jedi who came back with me from Coruscant. Not everyone in the Order is in agreement with the High Council on some of the Senate's recent decisions." Considering what Anakin had told her about his conversation with Master Vos and the two Padawans last night, Padme supposed that that was the truth. From a certain point of view. She had to admit that it was extremely disconcerting to hear Obi-Wan, even if it wasn't her Obi-Wan, discussing it so casually. Satine put a hand over her mouth, trying to hide how badly that revelation had shaken her. After a moment, she folded both hands into her lap and looked back at Queen Amidala.
"Well?"
Amidala tugged thoughtfully on the end of one pearl-encrusted braid.
"Most of the systems in the Confederacy don't provide any military support," she said. "The majority simply aren't capable of doing so. You know the kind of systems that the Confederacy has traditionally attracted, Satine. Most can barely provide for themselves. Despite a few cries to the contrary in the Congress, we don't require that kind of financial or military support. We may in the future. In fact, it's almost certain that it will come to that if we want to be anything other than a poor copy of the Republic. The systems of the Confederacy must support each other. Otherwise, we're no better than the Alliance of the Hutts."
"I can't guarantee that Mandalore will never be asked to provide support for the war, Duchess. I won't make that promise, and I won't lie and say that I can. provided that the Confederacy lasts that long. I'm up for re-election in 6 years. The president who comes after me may change everything. But I will not force anyone in the Confederacy to support something that they oppose on moral or ethical principles. And, for a moment, she bared her teeth in something that came very close to fury. I will never withhold humanitarian aid as ransom for a system's political cooperation. I've no desire to repeat the Republic's mistakes. Satine stared at her for a long moment, then nodded very slowly. I believe you. Amidala exchanged a look with Captain Kenobi and sat back in her chair, her fingers flaring out for a moment before curving around the armrests. And is Mandalore joining the Confederacy, Duchess? I must admit, Satine said after a moment, even given our differences in opinion, the Confederacy is a more attractive option than the other offer I received. Amidala sat straight up. What other offer? From the Alliance of Separatist Systems, Satine said. I've no idea how they heard about our troubles. I certainly didn't tell them. I don't have any contacts there. But I was contacted by a man who claimed to represent the Alliance, as if I didn't know that no one being could bring the Alliance to heel. He offered me the aid we required to keep Mandalore's children from dying in exchange for the allegiance of the Council of Neutral Systems. He ought to have known that although I represent the Council of Neutral Systems, I would hardly turn over 2,000 worlds to the rabble of the Alliance, even for Mandalore's sake. Captain Kenobi frowned. That is worrisome, he said. I've heard some troubling rumors about the Alliance lately. I know that you have no reason to listen to me, Satine, but I'd advise that you and the other members of the Council stay well clear of them. I know that in the past both we and the Republic have written them off, but it's starting to look like that may have been a mistake. What do you mean? Bale asked him, frowning. He shook his head slightly. I'd rather not spread unsubstantiated rumors. I have friends looking into it now, who are better suited for that sort of investigation than I am at the moment. To hear that the Alliance has been making overtures at the neutral systems, that's troublesome. Given the Alliance's actions in the past, it certainly struck me as suspicious, Satine said. But under the circumstances... She hesitated for a long moment, then said reluctantly, Mandalore has been loyal to the Republic for many centuries, many millennia. Mandalore has never betrayed that trust. There are some in the Republic who believe that Mandalore is only biding its time, Queen Brea said in her soft voice, speaking for the first time since the meeting had begun. Many systems still remember the Mandalorian Wars, even though they were almost 4,000 years ago. There are systems in the Republic with long memories. Long memories when it comes to old enemies, but not to new friends, Amidala said scathingly. If the Senate extended half that caution towards the Trade Federation, they would realize the danger they're in. Quite. Satine considered her for a long moment. How soon could that aid arrive? I'll have to send a courier back to Naboo, Amidala began. Alderaan consented immediately, Brea said. Bale nodded agreement. No one expects Naboo to support the entirety of the Confederation, he told Queen Amidala. Especially not after the Federation bombing. Alderaan can handle this one. I'll talk to Mon. I think Chandrila will be able to offer aid, too. Some of the tension went out of Satine's shoulders. Thank you, she said. And that's whether or not you decide to leave the Republic, Bale said. Like Padme said, we're not going to withhold aid purely on political reasons. He glanced at the Queen, who nodded slightly. It's a big decision to make, Satine, she said quietly. I know that better than anyone. I don't want you to feel trapped into making it if you're not ready or willing to do so. Like every city he had ever been in, Aldera City had a nice veneer on the surface and a dirty underbelly hiding beneath that. Alderaan didn't come near to matching some of the places Quinlan had been, some of which were nothing but dirty underbelly, but that didn't mean it wasn't there. He had changed out of his Jedi robes into his civilian gear, pulling a heavy cloak with moth-eaten fur lining over that. The snow was no longer falling quite as heavily as it had the night before, but it was still coming down, so that the droids clearing the city streets didn't have so much as a minute for a break. Quinlan had to admit that he was a little impressed that they had gotten down to this part of the city at all. Snow or not, the cantinas were still open, if a little more empty at this hour of the morning than they would be later on in the day. Quinlan ducked into one with a blinking image of a scantily clad Togruta woman in the window, pushing his hood back and stamping his feet to get the snow off his boots before proceeding further into the room. There weren't many other people in the cantina. The Trandoshan behind the bar glanced up at his entrance, then returned her attention to the datapad she was reading. Neither of the two humans seated at the bar even looked around, and the Alina male and Zeltron female seated in one of the booths never stopped their heated whispering. Quinlan let his gaze slide over them all, without lingering on any individual, and started across the room, heading towards the booth in the back right corner. The blue-skinned Twi'lek woman sitting there watched his approach silently, one hand curved around her drink, the other hidden beneath the table. She didn't speak until he slid into the seat across from her. "The cantina is clean," she said. "I slept it when I got here." "Good," Quinlan said, and finally relaxed back, letting some of the tension leave him. Aayla Secura gave him a wan smile and pushed a drink across the table towards him. "It's a little early," Quinlan said, but he took a sip anyway, expecting alcohol and coughing when it turned out to be hot calf instead. Aayla rescued the cup before he knocked it over, wrapping her long fingers around it. "I thought you always taught me to pay attention to my surroundings, Master Quinn," she said, grinning.
"Yeah, well, sometimes the teacher becomes the student."
Quinlan wiped the back of his hand across his mouth, then said, "Have you heard anything out of Coruscant in the past week or so? From the temple?" She shook her head. "Not with the holonet down, and since Alderaan was cut out of the government relays, I couldn't hijack a signal either. Alderaan isn't close enough to send a flash message, not with all the core relays down. Master, what's happened? The local holonews says that it's some kind of bug in the system, but that's supposed to be impossible with all the redundancies in the system." "The Senate took down the holonet relays from the core to the mid-rim. A couple of days ago, they took down the rest of the system, too," Quinlan said. As her eyebrows shot upwards, he added, "I know how it sounds, but Dooku did it on purpose to keep his plans from leaking out and tipping off the Confederacy. I guess he weighed the economy against what it would mean to end the war before it really gets started, however he means to do that, and decided that it was worth the risk."
"That is a very unexpected decision," Aayla said after a moment of thought.
She took a sip of her calf and said, "But that isn't why you're here, is it, Master? Something else has happened."
"Yes."
Quinlan searched for the words, couldn't come up with a delicate way to put it, and finally decided to just come out and say it.
"I'm leaving the Order. I have left the Order."
Aayla made a sudden sharp motion with one hand, knocking her cup over. She and Quinlan both jumped up and cursed as the hot liquid spilled across the scarred tabletop, both of them grabbing frantically for napkins to try and mop it up. The Trandoshan bartender never even looked up. Aayla pushed the empty cup and the pile of crumpled up wet napkins to the end of the table nearest the wall, then leaned forward towards Quinn and said, "You're what? Why?"
"About 4 weeks ago, the Jedi arrested Obi-Wan Kenobi and brought him back to Coruscant, to the temple, to stand trial for crimes against the Force."
"I hadn't heard that." Her brows drew together. "What does that have to do with anything, Master? I know that you and Captain Kenobi used to be friends, but that was a long time ago. If the Council found him guilty..."
"The Council remanded him to the Chamber of the Ordeal to take his trials of knighthood. The logic being that the case was too confused for anyone but the Force to judge him."
As her eyes widened, Quinlan laid it all out. Not the slightly truncated version he had given Kit and Eeth. The Force alone knew what Barriss had told Luminara that had resulted in her making that decision, because he certainly didn't know. But all of it, all of the dirty details, everything he had seen in the council chamber, and everything he had heard from Tholm and Plo Koon. If anyone deserved to know the absolute truth, it was Aayla. When he had finished, Ayla's expression had gone set. She laced her fingers together, resting her chin on them, and said finally, "What do you want me to do?"
"What you do is your decision, Aayla," Quinlan said.
"I can't make the choice for you. I can only tell you what I've seen and what I've done." Aayla shook her head a little. She stood up abruptly, collecting the cup and the used napkins, and said, "I need a moment," before going over to the bar. Quinlan sat back in his seat, rubbing a hand over his face. He wanted Aayla with him. She had been his apprentice, the way he had been Tholm's, and he wanted her with him, wanted the surety that his lineage wouldn't be split the way Yoda's was, and wanted someone at his back that he could trust absolutely. But it was a lot to ask of any Jedi, and Quinlan wouldn't do that to her. Aayla came back with two mugs of calf, putting one down in front of him before taking her own seat. "Master Quinlan," she said, dropping the honorific. "It's a lot to take in. It's a lot to ask." Quinlan wrapped his hands around the warm cup. "I'm not asking. I'm not telling either." "I know." She tipped her head back against the torn cushions of the booth, shutting her eyes. "It's done, isn't it? It's already done. You and Master Luminara and Master Tholm and Master Tra, even Master Plo."
"Tholm and Tra didn't make the same decision that Luminara and I did," Quinlan pointed out.
"Neither did Plo." "But it comes down to the same thing, doesn't it? Not all the Jedi are listening to the High Council anymore."
Aayla rubbed the side of her thumb against her jawline, frowning.
"Is it schism, Quinlan? Has it come to that?"
Quinlan slapped a hand against the table.
"No!"
The Trandoshan behind the bar looked over at the sound, decided that nothing averse was going down, and went back to her datapad. More quietly, Quinlan said,
"It's not a schism. It hasn't gone that far yet. It won't go that far. Tholm and Tra won't let it. That's why they went to go find proof of what Obi-Wan said. Once the Council has clear evidence that the Sith have returned..."
Aayla shivered a little at the mention of the Jedi's boogeyman.
"What if there isn't any?"
"There will be," Quinlan said. "There's something out there, stirring. You can feel it in the Force."
"And if it isn't the Sith? Then it's still something of the dark side," Quinlan said. "That's for the Jedi to fight." "Then we should all be united," Aayla said. "We shouldn't be doing this. How can we fight something if we're divided ourselves? If we're fighting ourselves? Because that's what will happen, Master Quinn. If there are Jedi with the Naboo and Jedi with the Republic, then sooner or later we'll be facing our brothers and sisters across a battlefield. If Jedi fight Jedi, then the dark side has already won. You don't need the Sith for that."
"It won't come to that," Quinlan said.
"You can't know that."
"It won't come to that," Quinlan repeated.
"I won't..." He stopped as Aayla lifted her eyebrows again. "All right, you're right, I can't guarantee that. But, Aayla, it's already happened. It's done. All we can do now is choose what we're ready to fight for. And against." "We're Jedi, Master Quinn," Aayla said, her expression distraught. "We swore oaths. To the Order, to the Republic, to the Force."
"Only one of those really counts, and you know it," Quinlan said.
"The Republic is corrupt. The Order has lost its way."
"Has it?" Aayla passed a hand over her face, then said decisively,
"I can't do this, Master Quinn. I won't do this."
Quinlan blinked once, because that hadn't been the answer he had been expecting. He thought,
"Aayla, you said it was my decision," she said. She reached across the table and covered his hand with both of her own. I understand that you have your reasons, and so do Luminara and Tholm and the others. But I can't make this decision just because you did, not without seeing it for myself. It's not that I doubt you, Master, it's just... I can't believe that it's as bad as all that. Quinlan nodded, because he didn't trust himself to be able to speak, looking down at their joined hands. I won't betray you, Quinlan, Ayla said. I won't tell the Council you were here, or what you said about Master Tholm and Master Tra, Master Plo, any of the others. But I can't do this. I'm sorry.
I understand,
Quinlan finally said, with some difficulty. He had really thought that she would come with him. Ayla touched his cheek. May the Force be with you, Master.
And with you, Quinlan said automatically.
He covered his face with one hand, not wanting to watch her walk away, and felt her grip on his shoulder for a moment before she left, her boot heels clicking on the floor. He sat there for a long time, not looking at anything, and tried not to feel alone in the universe. No Jedi was ever alone, not truly, but he was damned if it didn't feel like it right now.